You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Our guest has carved an unparalleled career as a groundskeeper, and he's got it pretty much nailed after 72 years in the game. We are so honored to bring to the podcast the great George Toma. What an honor it is for me to talk to you. How did this get started?
Well, actually, it started back in 1940 in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And when I was 10 years old, my father died of anthracnose, which was black lung disease from working in the mines. So everybody was poor in that area. And so I had to go get a job. So my first job when I was 10 years old was on a vegetable farm. I got 10 cents an hour, 10 hours a day picking vegetables. Then when I was 11, I got a job on a chicken farm, and the pay was 50 cents a day, and they gave you lunch. But the farmer taught me a lot. Every Saturday he would say, George, go kill two chickens and carry all the eggs and vegetables you can carry. So then I was 12 years old. Our neighbor across the street, Stan Scheckler, was the groundkeeper for the Wilkes-Barre Barons, which was an Eastern League team for the Cleveland Indians. So I started to work for him, and so I learned under him. And then when I was 16 years old, Bill Beck bought a number of minor league ball clubs with the Cleveland Indians, and he made me the head groundkeeper when I was 16, a senior in high school. And he made Stan a trainer because he had trainer experience. Then back in 1948, 49, and 50, Bill Beck would send me with Amo Bozzer, the world's greatest groundkeeper, who was at Cleveland, to build minor league camps like at Army Air Bases, Naval Air Stations for spring training. And we went to Driver, Virginia, and then we went down to Marianna, Alabama, and then we went to we went to Daytona Beach, and we built seven fields there, and today that is where the Daytona 500 is.
At what point in time when you first stepped on a baseball field did you say, wow, this could be my life, or was it just a job in the beginning?
Well, actually, it was a job, and I loved sports. I was too small to play sports, but I love sports, love baseball, and just by hanging around the ballpark and working with Stan Scheckler and then Bill Beck, Amo Bozzer, and then I started to get a lot of feels from other ball clubs. And then back in 1950, I went into the Korean War for 2 years, and when I came back from the Korean War, there was no baseball in Wilkes-Barre. They moved the franchise to Reading, Pennsylvania. So Hank Greenberg, who was with the Cleveland Indians that time, says, well, George, you're going to go to Reading, Pennsylvania. And I said, Hank, I'm not going. I said, the groundkeeper, there's my friend. He has a family and some children. I'm not going to take his job. So he says, we'll send you to Sherbrooke, Canada. We got a new stadium up there. I said, okay, I'll go. In the meantime, Wilkes-Barre gets an expansion club, and Detroit gave him a lot of ball players. So back in 1954, I worked more or less for Detroit. And then in 1955, they took me to the International League in Buffalo, New York. Then they sold Buffalo. And then in 56 and 57, we went to Charleston, West Virginia, of the American Association AAA. And then one August day, John McHale called me. He said, they just gave Kansas City permission to talk to you about getting the head job out there. He said, go up in the press box and call Park Harrell, the general manager. So before I called Park Harrell, I called Amo Bozzer, the groundkeeper at Cleveland, see what I should do. And he said, George, don't go to Cleveland. I'm in there a few times a month for Lou Boudreaux, who's managing there. And he said, it feels bad. He said, not only that, but in the springtime, he'll flood you out, and in the summertime, he'll bake you out. So I went out there to just look at the job, and then from there I went to Denver, because the Houseman brothers owned Denver, and they wanted me to work there at Bear Stadium. Mm-hmm. So looked at the ballpark in Kansas City, and it was really bad. So I went back to Charleston, West Virginia, thought it over, and I said, George, your best bet is to go to Kansas City. If you mess it up, nobody would ever know.
When you talk about bad field conditions, how bad were some of those fields back in the day?
Well, actually, a lot of fields were kind of bad, you know, and Kansas City was really bad, you know. Even the ball players would go out there and help pull the crabgrass before I got there on the infield, but I had the help of a agronomist from Toro Corporation, Dr. James Watson, who helped me. And then we went there and we turned it over in about 2 months to be one of the best in the league. And from there, you know, I stayed there in Kansas City and we had a good field, and the Yankees would talk to me about going there almost every major league club, but I'm a small town boy and I never wanted to live in a big city, so Kansas City's a small city for me.
But every team wanted to recruit you to come and work their field and supervise it, right?
Right. I mean, the Yankees always had the best offer, you know what I mean? I remember the players talking to me, you know, about going Casey Stengel, Ralph Houck, Yogi Berra, Hank Bauer, and those people, you know. And they says, you know, I said, I don't care for New York. I said, I only live 3 hours away from New York. He says, well, you can live in New Jersey. I said, yeah, but it's 50 cents a day to go over the bridge in that day. And they said, don't worry about that. The player says, we got $500 a month budgeted for the George Washington Bridge. But even after that, I, you know, had fielders from the Yankees. And then when Casey Stengel went to the Mets, he called me, wanted me to go to Mets and other clubs. But I'm the small town boy, so Kansas City is about my right side of the town.
Along comes Kauffman Stadium and the advent of artificial turf. How did that change your professional life?
Well, actually, it was the same, because my job is always to give the players the best possible conditions to play on. I mean, a good playing field. The cheapest insurance for an athlete is a good, safe playing field. And that's what I try to give the players. Then after that, I'd like to give the fans in the stands and the fans on TV a feel of beauty. And then by doing that, and then not taking too much money from the owner's coffers. But in those days, I practically worked by myself. And today, being in Kansas City, I never had a full-time assistant from 1957 to 99. I had to work by myself many times. And
is that what you wanted?
Well, if I had to work by myself, I got it, you know what I mean, to do it. But it was in those days. I mean, things have changed, you know. I was by myself, and I had at Kauffman Stadium, I had Arrowhead Stadium, and had the complex, and had the practice fields and things like that. So, but never had an assistant, you know. But it was a different operation. Today, you know, the Trevor Vance, who I got the job with the Royals, he has three assistants all year, and the Chiefs ground crew, they have four or five. They work all year. But Jack Stedman, the late Jack Stedman, who was the general manager for the Chiefs, would always tell me I always got paid by baseball because they had my contract and they collected from the Chiefs. So Jack would always tell me, hey, we don't have enough money to give you a raise or something like that. He said, but you do a hell of a good job. You know, if you leave here, it'll take two or three people to replace you. As soon as I left, they had three people, one for Arrowhead, one for Kauffman Stadium, one for the complex. So we were pioneers, Monzo say, like pioneers going west. That was me, you know. And
when Wade Boggs won a gold glove in New York with the Yankees, he bought watches for all the groundskeepers for all the great work that he felt they had done to groom third base in Yankee Stadium. How have the players through the years acknowledged your work?
Well, actually, in my days, you know, it's a thank you, you know. Players like Joe Mauer thanked me today, you know, he's going back, and coaches, managers throughout the years. And my job is to give the players a good playing field to play on. And Even Rodriguez came here one time when you had that big salary. He played with Texas, and it was here at the stadium here. Mm-hmm. And he talked to me, and he wanted me to go to Texas and be a groundskeeper, assistant groundskeeper there. And he would pay me any amount of money I wanted just to take care of the infield from second base to third base. Mm-hmm. And he talked to me before the game, and then he talked a half hour, and he came back another half hour after the game. I said, no, I said, the groundkeeper down there is my good friend. I didn't do nothing like
that. Nothing could bite. You couldn't bite.
Right. But Rodriguez and I are close. A lot of players are close. You know what I mean?
You're wearing a Minnesota Twins shirt as we conduct this interview in the home of the Twins, Lee County Stadium in Fort Myers, Florida. Tell us about your responsibilities with the Minnesota Twins and at this park.
Well, actually, I retired from the Kansas City Royals in 1999.
You never retired.
And so the next 13 years after I retired, I was at home 45 days a year. I was doing work in the United States here and in overseas for the NFL. Mm. And like this year was my 50th Super Bowl. And it's something that I like to do. So I come down here for 8 weeks and I work for the Twins in the county. And I like to say this, I work for the A's under Finley and the Royals under Kaufman and the Chiefs under Hunt. But Terry Ryan and the Twins, I mean, are astounding operation. I mean, it's a people operation. I mean, and I've been coming down now for 17 years doing spring training here.
How was Finley to you, who was a very difficult man?
Well, I like to say this. I work for Charlie, I work for Hunt, I work for Kaufman, and Charlie Finley was the best owner I ever worked for.
Really?
Riley. I mean, Charlie, everybody didn't like Charlie, but in this materialistic world, a lot of these big shots, they forget about you. But Charlie took care of me, and he took care of the ground crew. And most of my ground crew was black, and Charlie took care of them. When they put that canvas down fast, they used to put it down in 45 seconds, and Mel Allen would say, hey, those boys should be in the Olympics. And then Charlie would double their salary and say, hey, take them down to Brian's Barbecue, and any kids hanging around, take them in and tell Arthur to send them the bill. They used to drag the infield in the fifth inning perfectly, better than they do today in 28 seconds.
Wow.
And then when school started, he would give them $100 a piece to go buy school clothes, but they had to bring the clothes to him to show him what they had. So he was a really good owner. Now, Kaufman was outstanding, but the only thing about Kaufman, people don't want me to hear or say this, they didn't have a good front office to take care of the ground crew. I mean, in other words, we were ground crew, we were way on the bottom.
Mm.
Hunt, a great owner. I mean, we were very, very close, but the front office there again, we were rare at the bottom. And if I say that, you know, like if Finley treated us great. I mean, he did everything. When the sports writers came in for the first trip, we had a picnic area. He'd have a big barbecue for the sports writers. But soon the sports writers got out of there. The ground crew and top crew was up there eating the same thing as the sports writer. But that was Finley type. But it's business, I know. With Kaufman was outstanding, but the front office, you know. I say that they treated me mean, I would say that. But they don't like to hear that. And same thing with Hunt. He treated me so great, but the front office, you know. And now when I go to Kaufman Stadium, I worked about a month last year with the World Series and the playoffs. I mean, it's a different atmosphere with David Glass owning the ball club. I mean, it just differs between night and day from the old regime to David Glass regime. I mean, it seems everybody's happy, you know, and like Trevor, I never had any assistants. I had to push snow by myself, things like that, work by myself. Trevor has three assistants all year. And under Dayton Moore, You know, we had general manager, so forth. But I noticed when Dayton Moore took over in 2006 that things changed out there. And it's not only it's a business affair, but not only it's a family affair. And it, I never seen anybody say anything bad things about Dale Moore and Dayton Moore and the operation. Where in the olden days, most of the people were dissatisfied, but they don't like to hear me say that. But I'm like Harry S. Truman, you know, people think I give them hell. I just tell the truth, and they think it's hell.
George Thoma is with us on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Give me a day that you will never forget where the weather conditions were just horrific for your baseball field.
Well, actually, we had a lot of weather in Kansas City. And even in the minor leagues, you know, you have bad weather. I remember when I was in Charleston, West Virginia, and we had a big rainstorm. And Eddie Stanky was managing, I believe it was St. Paul. And we thought, well, we're not going to get this game in. You know, we're winning now. And I had a lot of sawdust. And I just loaded that infield dirt up with sawdust. And we went to beat Eddie Stanky. And Eddie Stanky was a great guy. And he always remembered that. And he would kid me about it.
The technology, though, right now on the fields throughout the major leagues have never looked better. What technological advances have there been in your lifetime on the field that you never could have imagined years ago?
Well, I think right now you have better grasses, varieties of grass seeds, and you have sod companies that could give you good sod. But in my days at the old stadium in Kansas City, we had baseball, we had the Athletics and the Royals, we had the Kansas City Chiefs football, and we had the Kansas City Spurs soccer, and all three sports, and we never re-soldered the field. And now they sod 2-3 times a year, and we grew the grass, and baseball said we had the best infield, best playing field in baseball. Football said we had the best playing field in football. And Pele said we had the great soccer player. We had the second best soccer field in the world. And we did all that without, resodding. And a lot of clubs saw 2 or 3 times. But the groundkeepers are a lot of good ones now. But sometimes I know some groundkeepers, and I give them heck, and they don't like to hear it. One ball player was telling me at the World Series, he was with a ball club, and people should know this. He was with a ball club, and this ball club is known for years, maybe a decade or more, that they got the worst infield in baseball. Everybody complains about it. When the clubs come here, they always say, hey, that's the worst field. But there was an outfielder went to the groundkeeper and says, hey, you got to do something about our grass here. That ball is snaking 2 feet or more. And the groundkeeper says, look up to the stands up there. You see that TV camera up there? And they said, yeah. He said, well, I take care of that field for TV. I don't take care of the field for baseball. But people like that don't belong in our game. But they are in the game, and they're not looking out for the safety of the players. Mm.
And now these fields drain like never before. At Yankee Stadium in New York, it could rain for 2-3 hours. They'll just wait it out, and then they'll start playing baseball, which was unimaginable years ago.
Well, actually, in the olden days, you had soil, dirt for infields and outfielders. But now you have good drainage, maybe every 10 feet apart. They're drain tile underneath with a layer of pea gravel. And then you have a sand mix. It could be pure sand or 90% sand, 10% peat. And I like Kansas City, and we had 85% sand and 15% peat, and never had any problems since 95.
You have done, as you just mentioned, every Super Bowl. You have consulted with those who maintain fields around the world. You have done Olympic. You are Babe Ruth.
Well, I'm just a nitty-gritty dirt man. You know, I just love what I do. You know, I did two Olympics when they had problems. The 84 Olympics, they had problems in L.A., so they asked me to come out. And then in the 96 Olympics, I was working for the St. Louis Rams. They moved from L.A., and I was consulting on building three fields for the Rams. And a telephone rang, and the first call was from Anglius, the owner of the Baltimore Orioles, wanted me to come up as soon as I can to meet with their groundkeeper and check the Baltimore Orioles field. And I said, I can't, you know what I mean, because I'm resodding here, it's the 4th of July, and I have to get this done. So the call, another call comes in, and it's from Billy Payne, the head of the Atlanta
Olympic Committee.
So he called me, said, George, you kind of got to come down here. Our field's bad, and we're having opening day ceremonies, and we're going to have the track out there. I said, I'm sorry, Billy. I says, I can't do it. I said, I got to finish this job. Then I got to go to Monterrey, Mexico to get ready for an NFL game down there. He said, oh, come on, you got to do it. I said, I can't. I said, I'll try, Billy. I did try something. Maybe I can do it. So I called up the Arizona State University crew and asked them, would they go down and get started for me at Monterey so I could go ahead and do the Olympic Stadium in Atlanta. And we worked on, they only gave us about 48 hours or less, and they had a elevator in the center of the field to bring up the people for the Olympic opening day ceremony. So we had to take that elevator out and then fill it up and then lay the sod. And we got it all done. And so then after got it done, I went down to Monterey.
You are on everybody's speed dial. Before we go, I want you to talk about this phrase that I told you I have over my desk in my office at home that says, and then some. Tell me about that.
Well, actually, there was a vice president of the Shawnee Mission Hospital in Kansas City, there in Overland Park, Kansas, and he would come to the ball games, and he was from Baltimore, but he moved there, and he wrote a letter to Ewing Kaufman about me, that he'd been watching me work, and I do everything, and he said that I do the job and then some. I do more than a lot of people really would do. And that and then some distinguishes the mediocre from the great. So that caught on to me. I always said, well, let's do the job and then some. And then George Brett and I got that and then some attitude. So George Brett and I would say, you know, let's do the job and then some. And like George Brett would say, George, two Georges, me and George Brett, we were the first ones at the stadium, and we were the last ones to leave. And we couldn't wait to be the first ones back the next day. So it's that and then some that you do a little extra, 100% or more. But it's since that day way back, maybe 40 years ago, that's been my motto, to do the job and then some.
And you must have the greatest looking lawn in the world.
No, I got the worst looking lawn in the world because I do a lot of experiments with seed, you know, and things like that. And so I never have much time to take care of it, you know, and I work on it now, but we had a boy there, John Cundiff, who used to follow me around on the field, you know, all the time. And he owns a big lawn service company. And he comes in and takes care of me and takes care of my lawn, and he won't take a penny because he says I taught him the and then some in his business, and he does it for me all the time.
What an honor for me to spend time with you and to just take a moment to give a glimpse of this incredible life that you've had. And I thank you so much and then some. Thank you, George, for being with me.
Well, thank you, and to you and all your fans out there, I like to say thank you for having me on your program, and may all your good fortunes be as numerous as blades of grass and then some.
So that'll do it for us on MLB.com. If you're listening on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.